So we're in paper 36 still, section 5. We got a ways into section 5. So in this old single column, we're on page 403, and it's paragraph number 13. Which you can find easily. In section 5, you have the list of the seven adjutants, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the paragraph that's right after the paragraph for the seventh adjutant, that one that starts with the adjutant mind spirits. Let's see. So yeah, let's remind everyone of that. So last time we went through with fair amount of detail, one by one, each of the seven adjutants, so that we appreciated those starting points of recognition that the Revelators give us for each of the adjutants. And the thing we really noticed was they were mixing in varying degrees an initial recognition that's on the just functioning as an energy of something side. In other words, just what an animal, how an animal utilizes that adjutant, or how we use it merely as we're animal origin. And then blended with that is the spirit of something side. The way that adjutant functions when it's part of a coordinated system, when you have an encirclement in the Holy Spirit that's capping off that adjutant mind ministry, and essentially permeating down through it, you could say, in a sense, and tending through the seventh adjutant to lead to more of a unity-like, holistic character to how we can use adjutant mind, beyond what any animal can do. And in that mode, it's appropriate to think of it as more of a spirit of something instead of just an energy of loyalty. It's now a spirit of courage, for instance, potentially. Doesn't mean it ceases to be also the energy of loyalty, and that's very important, but just to reflect on that. That distinction between what could be up or down, downward oriented, to what is more definitively upward oriented. Courage is definitively upward, whereas we all know people can manifest loyalties to some very basal facts, very benighted facts. But the fact that they can do that, no matter how ignoble the what they're using that third adjutant for, they can be distinctly loyal because of that adjutant. They can be very loyal to whatever corrosive movement they're involved in, for instance. Okay, so having done that, then they finish up this section with a little bit more of the big picture about the adjutants, and there's going to be all kinds of fun things here that we can explore. So let's just get right into it here.
The adjutant mind spirits experientially grow, but they never become personal. They evolve in function, and the function of the first five in the animal orders is to a certain extent essential to the function of all seven as human intellect. This animal relationship makes the adjutants more practically effective as human mind. Hence, animals are to a certain extent indispensable to man's intellectual as well as to his physical evolution.
Okay, now so that one little paragraph just is a great reminder of how the book in general is constructed. They have a very important element to give you, and if they can give it to you in one paragraph, that's what you get. Doesn't mean that it's any less important than than something that might be given a whole section or something. Every sentence, every word is equally important. And there's, this is a very significant paragraph. Let's start at the top of it. So that whole thing, the adjutant mind spirits experientially grow. Okay, well, fundamentally, why is that possible? It's the mind of the creative mother spirit that we're talking about here. It's, you know, it's not, like we said, you know, we call them the adjutants or the adjutant mind spirits, or, and we kind of talk about them like they were entities or even almost beings at times, but they're not. They're just a phase of her mind. She's experiential deity. So there can definitely be the experientially part there and grow. I mean, what kind of experiential deity is she? She's evolutionary experiential deity. Right? She's evolving. So of course her mind is evolving. You know, and to just appreciate that her evolution, you know, is not just, you know, her looking up, striking step with the evolution of God the Supreme above her, but equally the evolution of things all the way down to the lowliest material that she's engaged with below. The whole system is evolving, and she is, you know, in synchrony with that whole cosmic system. So, you know, the evolution of life on a given world where she's attuned her adjutant mind, the evolution of that life is part of the greater evolution. It's, you know, it's part of how she evolves by striking very intimate step with that, is how she's striking step with the Supreme, the evolution of the Supreme. So, you know, that, you know, it's just another reminder of something that's very different in the fifth epical revelation relative to historical thoughts about God. You know, you just didn't have evolutionary deity as an idea that people were playing with for God, but you do here. Yeah.
So is she then in this way part of the progress of evolution, the fact that evolution is always progressing, so to speak? Is that part of, you know, as she experiences it, is she also, you know, some way behind the scenes in the fact that it's going forward all the time, even though it may not seem that way all the time?
Yeah, I mean, so over it all, you have the inexorable forward evolution of the Supreme, of that deity. And that is very definitively getting downstepped through her. It's that vertical element of deity, the mother deity, you know, that is technically how you can have this vertical linkage. You know, so it's not her spirit type deity, but it's her mother type deity that allows her to be the conduit for evolution. I mean, we are grown by God the Mother. Everything is grown, everything is evolved by God the Mother. It's initiated by God the Father, but the means for it to grow is through mother deity. You know, and it's very much top down, and so it needs this vertical, you know, phase of deity that can bring it down from, you know, the whole of the finite is obviously going to be transcendent of any whole fact. So no matter what, how it jostles around down in the finite, as a total finite, it's going to always march monotonically forward. There's not going to be any jerking, you know, as it jostles backward and then, you know, slogs forward again. It's going to move smoothly forward as a total, you know, and so as you feed that down into the parts, you know, may jostle some. There may be some retrogression, some sideways movement, whatnot, but over time and over bigger, you know, collections of the finite, it can do nothing but eventually go forward, so that eventually everything can get settled in light and life. I mean, it's, you know, the reason that there can be an eventually to evolution is because of that inexorable total finite element that will get to completion. Okay, so.
Which brings me to another quick question.
I'm so sorry. No, go ahead.
So do you think the life carriers take that into consideration when they plan just the physical aspect of life, that the adjutants, because, you know, maybe you talked about they actually cover all kinds of life, one way or another, will actually affect, you know, the their plan or the growth of their plan?
Absolutely. I mean, it is the most important part of their plan. Okay. The over-control of evolution is through the adjutants and their evolution. Okay, and remember, I tried to stress that. That's why there are decimal worlds. Every, you know, roughly every 10 worlds, they do a test where they try to make sure they understand to enough decimal places where that input is, that evolutionary tendency that this is being fed in from the Supreme, where that is, because, you know, it changes with time. If nothing else, you know, you would expect maybe some sort of a geometric thing, you know, over the long span of time, and they've got to, you know, mark that out exactly where they are in that. You know, the slope is a little steeper here now, so we've got to take that into account, that sort of thing. Yeah, so that's all important. There's nothing more important to their plan for the evolution of life than that over control of evolution through the adjutants. Yeah. So, so every 10 worlds, they get that most important term pinned down, and then they do all the details, you know, under that umbrella. Okay, so there you have that. You have evolutionary deity. So everything is evolving, and then this next statement, very important. This is because this is the one spot where they tell you this. So the adjutants evolve in function, and the function of the first five in the animal orders is to a certain extent essential to the function of all seven as human intellect. Okay. When you study the evolution of creatures, you notice something interesting about the different species. Some species, you know, when you step back and look at the big picture over hundreds of millions of years, you notice that some species seem very much to have just been a means to a greater end. You know, they're just a transition, you know, to get you up a notch or through a certain phase. Other species, though, they suddenly come into existence, as species do. In terms of the span of the whole evolutionary process, you know, relatively quickly achieve their equilibrium state, and then just, you know, they plateau, and then they just stay unchanged over time. For instance, you know, 250 million years ago, during the Devonian, suddenly there were fishes, right? And in very short order, you had fishes that looked just like fishes today, okay? I mean, it's boom, and they lock in, and you have this very stable, you know, order of life that you can be very suspicious of is essential to being an ongoing platform for some of the adjutants, okay? So that when you think about how they would be monitoring life on the planet, they know which species are the fundamental foundation species for the adjutants, so that we stay properly minded. If you lose those species, you know, it's like the bottom will fall out from underneath of the mind we're using, okay? So you know they're not gonna go extinct. You know, they're ensuring that they stay in place.
They may get fished out.
Okay. Well, but see, again, they may not. See, I mean, coincidentally, things will happen where they don't get, you know, our fears aren't realized, okay? Other species, you know, not only may they have already really done their, you know, served their role in the process, because remember, the only reason there's any life is to produce will creatures, you know, or to sustain them like we're reading here. You know, none of them are genuinely ends in themselves. They're all just a means for our end, you know, for will creatures, children of God. So, you know, if there are species that, you know, have served their purpose, and, you know, the way things, you know, bat about in the processes, if they start to go extinct, I mean, they're not going to, you know, jump in there. I mean, they'll just let them go extinct, just like countless, you know, millions of species have gone extinct over the eons. Okay, so, you know, that's an important thing to keep in mind when you think about the species, that you have these very definitive anchor species, you know, that have this, you know, very noticeable pattern of boom, and it's like, you know, you look at this fossil of a fish back in the Devonian, and it's like, well, that looks like my dinner yesterday. Okay, I mean, it's like, that's identical, right? All right, they're very constant with time. Okay, you know, this is so essential, okay, as they're saying there, that even on non-breather worlds, you have to have animals, because those non-breathers have adjutant mind too, okay, and they can't have sustained proper adjutant mind for them unless you have animals. So you have non-breather animals. Remember, they make a point of telling you that, you know, and I mean, obviously they don't have plants, because there's no water, there's no air, there's, you know, all these sort of things, you know, and they may not even be much for sunlight, you know. It's sort of a big starlight, perhaps, is all you've got, you know, because you're way out in a solar system somewhere. You know, but animals, you know, there has to be animals, or you can't have this upheld adjutant mind for the will creatures on that world, as different from us as they are. Okay, see, so you can put these pieces together, so you can go, oh, that's why they mentioned there's animals, because it ties in with this sentence right here. So there's that, you know, and then they say this animal relationship makes the adjutants more practically effective as human mind. Hence, animals are to a certain extent indispensable to man's intellectual as well as to his physical evolution. So, you know, there's this, the maintaining mind part that we just talked about, but then there's that element too, that in order to get to where the adjutants can seat on us and do what they need to do, they have to go through that evolutionary process with those species. You know, if you're the phase of adjutant mind that's the second adjutant, you know, you reach down and you engage, you know, the first animals that are engageable, you know, and you follow them forward, and then you know, there's a suddenly, and you lock onto that, and you follow that, and you know, you're not only following them forward but upward, and you're slowly getting yourself tuned to where when Andrew and Fonta come along, you're right there and able to be the kind of second adjutant ministry that can be more than just the energy of rationalization, the dot-to-dot connector. You can be the spirit of understanding for Andon and Fonta. If they didn't go through that whole learning process, remember, it's teachable mind, it's being taught by evolution, okay? You know, so the creative mother spirit is being taught by evolution. And that's another thing, to think of God being taught, that's a little different than the history of thought about God, right? But, you know, that's being taught, and it now, you know, once Andon and Fonta come along, coincidentally, they know how to be the spirit of understanding. They can't just go to, well, we figured that out on the previous world, or the previous, you know, several million worlds. It's different on every world. They have to learn anew how to be the spirit of understanding for the will creatures on this world. It's different on every world. So just appreciating all that complexity. Right. Yep.
Does the adjutant mind spirit develop a way to get to the animal, or does?
Well,
I'm not asking very good, but I'm wondering if it comes top down or bottom up.
Okay. Well.
In a way.
Well, it's both. It's always both. Everything in the finite domain is a bidirectional phenomenon. Okay. You have, I mean, just think about, you know, you. You know, when you were conceived, just by that immediate nature, the first adjutant could engage you. But the second adjutant couldn't. Okay, second adjutant couldn't engage you as a single-celled organism. You know, that was somewhere down the road. Well, you know, what's going on? You have a development of the system. It finally reaches some level of complexity as a physical system where a particular adjutant can engage. You know, like for instance, when you're almost, roughly age six, and there's some final delicate additions to your brain that finally develop, you know, get into place. Molecules finally get assembled in the right way, and then the seventh adjutant can engage.
So that's the physical part. It's the developing the physical part. So it's just it has the capacity intellectually.
Right. I mean, it's all. I mean, you have obviously the seventh adjutant can't engage if the sixth isn't there. Okay, they aren't. You know, they aren't all going right down to the matter and engaging. I mean, only the first adjutant is really down there, you know, close to the matter, you know, the mechanical mind and the matter. Okay. But it still is the case that you have a development in the brain, okay, that is feeding up through the adjutants in terms of what forms are in that adjutant mind. And once certain last delicate things develop in the brain, and that feeds up through the adjutants. The sixth adjutant, you know, has just the proper form where the seventh can seed on it.
So really, that's just the physical development that provides the growth and the capacity for the gesture.
Yeah, now, the top-down part is more, well, in what way does the seventh adjutant engage? Okay, remember, it's not a binary thing. I mean, right now, none of us are using the seventh adjutant anywhere near to how we could. And it's impossible for us to use it as far as we could because we didn't get the biologic uplifts like we should have. So none of us will ever experience using the seventh adjutant to the extent that, you know, that we're supposed to be at this point because of what Adam and Eve did, okay? But, you know, the more we mature, the more of that seventh adjutant can engage. Okay, so, you know, and part of our maturing is not just our individual maturing. Part of it is this whole evolution of the Supreme. Okay, when the evolution of the Supreme is, you know, farther down the road than it is right now, all of the adjutants in any local universe will be able to engage at a higher level than they can now. Okay? And that's basically because, as we just read in the first sentence there, all those creative mother spirits will have grown and are actually able to deliver more adjutant ministry than they can right now. So this whole process is dynamic like that. God is constantly reaching down and giving you as much as you can receive, but there's no magic. Can't give you more than you can receive, have the capacity to receive, or that is literally in existence yet, temporally. I mean, so much of supremacy is not even in existence yet. You know, it's not there to be given to us, no matter how advanced, you know, one of us might be. Okay. So even in a world that's in the seventh stage of light and life, they haven't even begun to use things at the level they'll be able to, you know, a trillion years from now. Okay. I think we've probably worked that paragraph pretty well. Let me go to paragraph number two.
These mind adjutants of a local universe mother spirit are related to creature life of intelligence status, much as the power centers and physical controllers are related to the non-living forces of the universe. They perform invaluable service in the mind circuits on the inhabited worlds and are effective collaborators with the master physical controllers, who also serve as controllers and directors of the pre-adjutant mind levels, the levels of non-teachable or mechanical mind.
Okay, so just understand, so the mind adjutants are related, you know, as the power beings are to non-living issues. Okay, what do they mean there? Over-controllers, right? Those power beings are the over-controllers, and some of them can literally, you know, directly control, okay? But in general, they're the over-controllers of the material aspects of the cosmos. And like I was just saying a minute ago, it's through the adjutant mind ministry that evolution is over-controlled. That's the whole point of the over-control of evolution paper, right? After you go through the historical biology papers, or historical geology papers, I should say. okay, so that's all I mean there. The over-control aspect, that's in parallel. They perform invaluable service in the mind circuits on the inhabited worlds and are the effective collaborators. Okay, there, when you have the evolution going on the planet, you've got the master physical controllers, you've got the life carriers, and then you have this adjutant ministry, and it's really those three modes of engagement, you know, that are involved in manipulating this system so that it doesn't have any roadblocks in it, and God the Mother, you know, the evolution can engage it and grow it and evolve it. And they're over-controlling all of that, you know, breaking any log jams that develop or whatnot in the system. Yeah. And when you're talking about you know, serve as controllers and directors of the pre-adjutant mind levels, okay, the non-teachable mechanical mind. Again, remember, the creative mother spirit doesn't do that herself. The mechanical mind, she completely hands that off to her collaborators here, you know, her fellow offspring of the infinite spirit, the power beings. And when you're talking about mechanical mind, specifically, which of the master physical controllers, remember there's seven different flavors of them, which one ministers, actually, you know, directly is the minister of that mechanical mind? It's the mechanical controllers.
Duh.
Okay? Right? The mechanical controllers, that second group, if you go back in paper 29 and read in the list there, those are the ones, you know, so they have this presence that they establish. You know, and within their presence, they are ministering that mind ministry. Just like in her presence, she ministers the adjutant ministry. You know, they just have a ubiquity of mechanical mind energy presence, you know, within the boundaries of their being. Okay, and so we get mechanical mind. And notice this very key little statement there. Directors of the pre-adjutant mind levels. Okay, not level, but levels. Okay, mechanical mind has a lot of vertical depth. You know, has a lot of depth to it here in vertical ministry. It's ministering at the very rudimentary level, just so that a bacterium is minded. Say. Okay. But that goes all the way up. The level at which mechanical mind needs to be engaged in my body is a lot higher than what it needs to engage a bacterium. You know, and you take it all the way up to a material son and daughter, and you've got some of the much higher levels of that mechanical mind as the foundation of the mindal engagement of their body. You know, and it's now reached a high enough, energetic enough level that the interaction of those high phases of mechanical mind with their body does what? To the body of a material son and daughter?
Makes them glow.
Right? Right. That light of a violet hue, why we call them the violet race, that's the mechanical mind, one of the, you know, the higher levels of mechanical mind engaging their body. You know? And you know, it doesn't glow red, the lower energy end of the spectrum of light. It's up at the violet end. You know, there's probably even some of it in the ultraviolet. Okay, be my guess. You know, so it's a pretty high energy engagement of their bodies that literally You know, the interaction is visible. That mechanical mind is directly engaging the matter. There's an interaction. They're pushing back and forth on each other. That, you know, engagement is literally producing light. That interaction. That's why they glow in the dark.
If you hang out with them too much, you kind of get a tan.
Right. Yeah. If there's too much ultraviolet, yeah, you might get a tan around them. Now, think about the irony. You know, once it really sinks in, and you think about this, that the reason they glow, okay, is literally the lowest of mind energy facts. It's not spirit. It's mind energy, and it's the lowest of mind. It's the non-teachable mechanical mind that makes them glow. Now, how ironic is it that, you know, we put halos around saintly figures in our pictures, you know, stemming all the way back to people seeing Adam and Eve, you know, with their cloaks on at night to keep warm and their head glowing, you know, and so that produced that tradition of, you know, drawing halos in pictures. You know, so we think a halo is an indicator of high spiritual nature. No, it's not even teachable mind. It's not spirit at all. It's just mind, and it's not even teachable mind. And it's just, you know, the irony of that what we think is the highest of things is actually, you know, right down there, butting heads with dirt balls, okay, with matter, okay? It's a long ways from spiritual, okay? And this is true in general. You know, humans have long been fixated on very lowly physical things, and we call it, you know, being very spiritual. You know, maybe, you know, you decide that you're a very spiritual monk because you've figured out how to consciously get a hold of your mechanical mind and alter your body temperature at will. It makes you very spiritual, supposedly. Not so much, see? I mean, to just read between the lines of what they're trying to, you know, how primitive our thoughts are about spirit. You know, that literally we think spirit is mechanical mind.
But isn't there some spiritual aspect to those that do glow, are pretty, you know, evolved, so to speak?
Of course. I mean, that's why the halo thing started, you know, but...
Right, I understand where the energy is.
But you see, yeah, you just see, yeah, that's what I'm saying, the irony of it, you know.
So you think lifers glow?
Because they have those, there's differences with a material son and daughter, you know. So
that's a life, not so much life.
You know, not only is it mechanical mind, but you got that other stuff that's, you know, yeah, that mechanical mind is interacting with a body that is of a, you know, has an extra circulatory system, all that sort of stuff. And okay, you know, but just, you know, see the point of that is, the irony is, you know, we need to set our sights higher for our use of words like spirit. Just notice our tendency to look very lowly, to look to matter or that which is directly interacting with matter. You know, to not remember the very spiritual things that Adam and Eve did, but to remember that they glow in the dark. That's what we remember. Okay. That's the irony here. Okay.
We remember the screw up they did.
Okay. Yeah. Could you say something about the brilliant photography, being able to capture mechanical mind?
Right. And just, you know, so those things like, you know, like Kirlian photography, to recognize mechanical mind is very close to, you know, the matter in the arm of this chair. It's very close to that kind of an energy. So it's something that you could potentially observe, you know, if you look at the electromagnetic, because electromagnetic things are in that same ballpark as mechanical mind. They're a physical energy that's really close to being literally matter. You know, and so, you know, once we get to the point where we acknowledge the existence of something besides matter, we'll quickly recognize, oh, actually, for a long time, we've actually had some observations that we've been dismissing because we thought these people were nuts and they were off on some woo-woo tangent. But, you know, you actually can image that mechanical mind some. You have to be, I mean, if you couldn't measure it to some degree, then you'd be refuting the revelation. I mean, it interacts with matter. Kirlian photography is where you take you take a leaf and you put it on a device, that you, and so you electromagnetically energize this, and you take a photo and you see this energy halo around the leaf.
You know, it's aura.
Yeah, it's quote unquote, yeah. And so, we think of it all mystically and spiritually and stuff. Like, see, again, we use these spiritual terms for it, but it's this mechanical mind. See? And it's very literal. It's like I was saying, it doesn't take any fancy device to see Adam and Eve glowing in the dark. You can see it with your eyes. I mean, that's that same aura, that same, that's, with a little bit of amping up, so you can measure even, in a plant here. And that's all a plant has, is that mechanical mind. Right? Okay. All right, so just wanted to, get you to appreciate that and that little thread of irony in there about Adam and Eve.
Okay. Living mind, prior to the appearance of capacity to learn from experience, is the ministry domain of the master physical controllers. Creature mind, before acquiring the ability to recognize divinity and worship deity, is the exclusive domain of the adjutant spirits. With the appearance of the spiritual response of the creature intellect, such created minds at once become super-minded, being instantly encircled in the spirit cycles of the local universe mother spirit.
Okay, so just one little thing there. So, super-minded, instantly encircled in the spirit cycles of the local universe mother spirit, which is called what?
The Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit. Right. I mean, you read that, you shouldn't have to read to the next paragraph to get the answer. You should be recognizing what they're talking about there. You go all the way up to the seventh adjutant, and it's still very appropriately should be just thought of as a mind ministry. But you go the next notch up to the Holy Spirit, it's going to seat on that ceiling of adjutant mind. And now you should call it spirit ministry, not a mind ministry. Like the Holy Spirit is a spirit ministry. I've repeated it. The Spirit of Truth is a spirit ministry, just like the Holy Spirit is a spirit ministry. And both of those are spirit ministries, not mind ministries. Now there are an augmentation of mind, so when Jesus says you can borrow his mind, you can borrow, you can use the Spirit of Truth to help augment your mind and have it be more like his mind that you're quote-unquote borrowing, right? But it's, it's technically a spirit ministry. So you think of it as spirit energy now, not mind energy, when you go up to the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth. And so that's why it's super-minded. It's above mind energy. Okay. It's not, by super you mean literally, above, not amped up, not mind on steroids. Okay, not like that. Okay. And the other thing, and I try to be very careful when I talk about this, you talk about the adjutants encircling into you. So there you are, and they encircle through you. But you speak of you being encircled into the Holy Spirit. So you flip the orientation around. You're encircled in the Holy Spirit. You're being plugged into the whole, as opposed to some quasi-individuation reaching down and engaging you. The adjutants, it's now the arrows flip, and it's you being by grace made to strike step with the whole and be less innately individuated. Okay, so you're encircled in the Holy Spirit.
The adjutant mind spirits are in no manner directly related to the diverse and highly spiritual function of the spirit of the personal presence of the divine minister, the Holy Spirit of the inhabited worlds. But they are functionally antecedent to and preparatory for the appearance of this very spirit in evolutionary man. The adjutants unfold the universe mother spirit, afford the universe mother spirit a varied contact with and control over the material living creatures of a local universe, but they do not repercuss in the supreme being when acting on pre-personality levels.
Okay, so like I said, sure enough, that's the first thing they say is, yes, we're talking, they're super-minded, we're talking about being encircled in the Holy Spirit, and being very clear that the adjutant mind spirits are in no matter directly related to. Okay, the Holy Spirit is not some sort of fusion of the adjutants into a higher mind ministry or something like that. It's separate, it's independent, it's spirit ministry, okay? And mind energy and spirit energy are absolutely separated from one another because there's the absolute mind and the absolute spirit, okay? So, you know, when they say that in no manner directly related, that's because there's an absolute at the top of both of those energy systems that's absolutely separated them, okay? Now, why can they be antecedent to like this? Because they're at the super universe level, you have a much more holistic mind ministry. You know, when you talk about cosmic mind at that at the super universe level, what we're currently thinking of here is the Holy Spirit, distinct from adjutant mind, is together as one up there. As you downstep that cosmic mind into a local universe, it's still cosmic mind, okay? But when you downstep it, the unity-like core stands unmoved, and that's what we call the Holy Spirit. That unity core of that super universe-level mind is the Holy Spirit, okay? And the part that individuates it or relatively individuates from it is what we call mind down here, like in this case, adjutant mind. Okay, so the adjutant mind, you know, sort of orbits about, you know, is about and gets you focused more centrally as you go up the adjutants to the seventh adjutant, where you can get a hold of the core. Okay, but just like when you look, you know, you cut a tree down and you look, you know, you can distinctly see the heart, you know, in contrast to, you know, what's around it. You see that there, it's distinctly separate, that Holy Spirit, from that would be before. But if you get up transcendent enough, you can transcend that difference. So when you get up to the super universe level, what we're calling the difference between spirit and mind all is just mind, and spirit is something even higher that we can't even remotely relate to right now. Is completely transcendent of anything we can access right now. Up there, you have that, you know, that everything that's down here combined into the mind ministry that's in the womb of the reflective mother spirits. And the master spirit has a spirit ministry above that that you're reaching up towards. Okay, so that, even though at the top they're absolutely separated, mind energy and spirit energy, as you downstep, they're distinct. They're not absolutely separated, because you can see how we can talk about some blending together as we go up. They're going to be distinct, but relative to the level. Okay, so those subtleties, begin to appreciate that. Okay, so that's, yeah, and you know, another way to kind of think about how the adjutants get you up is just thinking about the psychic circles, moving up those cosmic levels, moving inward in the psychic circles, is bringing the sevenfold phase mind together to where you can relate to mind as a single phase, which we call Marantia mind. And obviously, a single phase of mind is going to be a lot more like that unity likeness of the Holy Spirit. So again, just you can think of it that way. And if you bring the adjutants together into one mind, Marantia mind, it's it's likely to be right there at the doorstep of the Holy Spirit. Okay. All right. Then that one last little thing. The adjutants afford the Universal Mother Spirit a varied contact with and control over the material living creatures of a local universe. Simplest way to think about that, when you're watching an animal, you're watching the Creative Mother Spirit. It's her mind. She controls that. Okay. There's no independence, there's no personality that absolutely separates what that mind ministry is doing from her personality. That's a downstepped expression of her personality. You watch that little spider doing all its fancy things, you're watching her. You're watching the low levels of her mind doing stuff. Okay? That's why it can be so profound, you know, even watching a little spider and how it, you know, has this whole sense of its space and it, you know, it's coordinating itself into that space and all this, you know, seemingly transcendent sort of mystical like, you know, characteristics of watching an insect do things. It's because it's her, you know, and there's no transcending. Somehow the spider mystically knows, you know, a yard diameter or space or something, you know. She's everywhere in that space. You know, she fills all space. It's her. You know, so she's just acting within the space. And so a spider builds a web that fills a space, you know, and sort of takes its position within that cosmic system. I just appreciate that. So animals are the Creative Mother Spirit. That's why animals, especially the higher animals, are so easy to anthropomorphize. Because above them there's a person.
Oh, I wish you hadn't told me that. And every time I suck up a spider in the vacuum, I'm going to feel, right. Oh, geez, I'm sorry, Mom.
But again, don't feel too bad, because when you die, your mind is going to be sucked up too. You don't get to take it with you. Right?
Start all over?
Right. I mean, you know, they're about to remind us of that. Yeah, that's coming up here. Just a second here. Okay.
Got an answer for that.
Remember that, you know, all of it, I mean, most of the time when you're watching me, you're not watching me either. You're watching the Creative Mother Spirit do her fancy animal thing. Okay? I have very limited personality encompassment of this phenomenon yet. Most of it is just her. You know, okay? And, you know, you can't actually suck it up. I'm within her. I am her. You know, she is me in most of my day-to-day manifestations of self. That's just what she does at this lowly level of mind. Okay, and you know, I'm trying to use. I'm borrowing her mind for a little bit, and seeing if I can make cosmic forms in it that the adjuster will copy into something that's separate from her. The soul is not part of her, but everything else is her, and it's going to go back to her. It's just on loan. But if I can do something with this mind I'm borrowing from her that's worth copying, now I've got something that's me, not just her. And that's all that's resurrected. It's the actual me, because she doesn't need to be resurrected, right? You know, spiders don't need to be resurrected. My animal origination doesn't need to be resurrected. It's God, okay? But I'm not God. I'm just borrowing the mind of God for a little while. You know, and, you know, that's why it's so sad when humans do what they do with the mind that's on loan from God. Because it's not separated from her. It's still part of her. And every defiling thought you have leaves a sour taste in her mouth.
I wanted to add,
well, again,
little eggs in a womb that have a light?
Yes, again, right. I mean, we're, I mean, we're literally unfertilized eggs right now. I mean, if you want to think of the soul, you know, the actual you, that's an unfertilized egg. Okay, when does that egg finally get fertilized?
Fusion.
It's fear of fusion, right? I mean,
not for a while.
Right, right. That's the point of spirit conception. Right, when the two fuse. I mean, when you talk about material conception, you talk about the two fusing. You use the same word, right? That's material, you know, conception, and there's spirit conception. Right. So, I mean, right now, I mean, that's why we don't even, you know, we're just a number, right? The eggs are just numbered. You know, until fusion, you don't have a name. Because the eggs are just numbered, okay? So yes, we are all very much eggs in her womb of mind, okay? And we stay in that womb. We're conceived in this womb, and we're finally birthed from this womb. You know, our mindal birth is when we leave the local universe as a first stage spirit. But until then, we're in her womb and completely dependent upon the umbilical cord connected to her. Yeah, I've pointed that out. You know, imagine sticking you in the Starship Enterprise and zooming you out of the local universe of Nebadon, and you know, the umbilical cord comes unplugged, and you shut down. Right? You have no ability to be independent yet. You're separate. You can number the eggs, okay, but you're not independent. You haven't, you know, you've been, you know, and that independence is, that's what you mean by birth. You know, when I'm birthed from my mother, I'm materially independent now.
So McCoy says, damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a mother spirit.
Yes. Right. Just, you know, I hope that's not too whimsical to bring in those things, but, you know, I mean, just trying to make the point. I mean, it's all very literal, you know, and it's nothing, it's no diss on you as a potential finaliter or an eternal lighter. Just a fact. Right now you're just an unfertilized egg. That's just a fact. You got a long ways to go yet, in this grand scheme of things.
Don wants to know, when do we directly come under the spirit of the master spirit?
Not, you don't directly until your first day spirit, until you're birthed out of her womb. Because right, like I was saying, right now, she's both the mind minister and the spirit minister. You know, so she's a downstepped expression in terms of spirit ministry of the master spirit, of the seventh master spirit. And she's a downstepped expression of the mind ministry of the reflective mother spirits of Orvintown. You know, so she downsteps both of those. She's a spirit mind ministry, spirit hyphen mind ministry. Because you get up there, and then you have that hyphen is broken. You have two separate wombs. You have a mind womb and a spirit womb that you're in. You know, and you're not birthed out of that spirit womb. You're birthed out of that mind womb in the super universe, obviously, when you leave the super universe. But you're not birthed out of that spirit womb until you graduate, until you're a graduate spirit, when you go from the seventh to the sixth circuit of Avona. You've got to get up above the master spirits, right, to get out of that womb. That's your first job on the seventh circuit, is to transcend the master spirits, to get above that spirit womb. That's why they call you a graduate spirit. You finally graduated out of that. As a four-stage spirit, you've graduated out of that spirit womb.
Yep. So you mentioned something a minute ago about, you know, leaving most everything behind. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm when I read the Arrange book, you know, when I don't necessarily always remember everything, I ask my thought adjuster to remember it so that it or he or yeah, can recall it, which, because I kind of always recall it. Is that a stupid thing to ask? I mean, is it? Are these some sort of these truths? Will they be something that you think we remember?
All the truths obviously have a memory that the adjuster can relate to. The things that are, you know, below that don't have a cosmic character, he can't remember. The adjuster can only remember those triune things. So the non-triune elements, if they are significant, they're getting recorded by the angels. And so all those things, remember, they tell you, you can look those things up, and you will re-resonate with them, sort of, you know, re-assimilate those memories. But you've got to, you know, get them in directly like that. You know, and then the question is just wide open. I mean, how big is the book, you know, that's recording everything that, that you're doing? I can't answer that question. I don't know. We'll all know when we wake up and, you know, see if it all fit into a, you know, on the grain of rice or, you know, how much did it take to record the stuff that's worth recording in my life? I don't know.
3 minutes.
You know, cliff notes of Chris Halverson.
And so when you said, you know, earlier that, you know, who we are, the embryonic, you know, I come, always go back to that, you know, when paper 140, chapter 8, I think it was, or 141, when Simon says, Jesus, you know, are all men the sons of God?
Uh-huh.
And he says, yes, that's all men are the sons of God. And that's the message that we're here to proclaim. Mm-hmm. So even though in technicality we are not theoretically a son of God yet, we are.
We're not an ascending son of God technically, but we are a faith son of God right now.
Okay,
so we are a son of God. Just you're not an ascending son until you fuse. Again, that, you know, goes,
okay,
obviously they don't, you know, an ascending son is not a numbered egg. Okay. Right. But once you have a name, ta-da, you're an ascending son. And then just that, you know, there's that, we can get back into the spirit. Remember the last thing he said that we talked about before the adjutants, but they do not repercuss in the supreme being when acting on pre-personality levels. Remember, it's just the sixth and seventh adjutant stuff, which has some immediate relationship to personality activity that is feeding into her as a supreme creator, you know, and hence into the summation, the almighty, you know, into the supreme. It repercusses into the, technically into the almighty, and then into the, you know, via that into the supreme being eventually. All right, so just that's what they're referring to there. Okay.
So non-spiritual mind is either a spirit energy manifestation or a physical energy phenomenon. Even human mind, personal mind, has no survival qualities apart from spirit identification. Mind is a divinity bestowal, but it is not immortal when it functions without spirit insight and when it is devoid of the ability to worship and crave survival.
Okay, so you notice they started with a big break between the paragraphs, because this is kind of a biggie that stands alone. So, all right, so let's think. There's, I mean, it's just, you know, really dense, all these statements. Okay, starts out confusingly. Non-spiritual mind is either a spirit energy manifestation. You're going, what? Isn't that contradictory? Okay, remember what they just said. So we are talking about mind, like adjutant mind, you know, being in at its apex, being encircled into the Holy Spirit. Okay, that's what they mean by spiritual mind. Mind, the energy that has, that reaches the level where it can be encircled into a spirit ministry. Okay, so non-spiritual mind, they mean mind that's below that, not encircled into a spirit ministry. Okay, so so in other words, we're not talking about something that's like a human. So what are the different things that might be in play? How else might you have mind energy in play? Well, we're immediately thinking, well, I could have just like an animal. Okay, that's physical energy phenomenon. Okay, so you have, you know, you're thinking about mind energy as being this intermediate energy that links matter and spirit. Okay, well, that linkage doesn't have to all be literally in front of you. When you're looking at a single individual here, an animal, okay, you got the matter and the mechanical mind, you know, and the adjutant mind up to some adjutant, you know, five at the most. Okay, and in that individual, you don't see the rest of the mind energy spectrum all the way up to spirit energy. Okay, but it's there effectively, just not quasi-individuated. You know, you go off to the side and remind yourself it's her mind and she goes all the way up to spirit. All right. Okay. So when we're talking about non-spiritual mind, so mind where in the individual, you don't see the whole spectrum from matter all the way up to spirit. So you might see the bottom part, and then so it's a physical energy phenomenon. You've got this physical energy thing, this animal, and it has this mind energy manifestation, this phenomenon, this observable fact, manifests from it. On the other side, well, what if you just have spirit energy that's not related to anything to do with being or anything? Like, for instance, we've mentioned this several times, you have the master physical controllers. They lay out a line of let's just say material energy in this case. I mean, let's not even say physical, because the physical kind of brings in like maybe mechanical mind and stuff too. But you just lay out some material energy, okay, one of these lanes of energy. And they say then you get the spirit controllers who lay out in parallel a line of spirit energy, okay, along with that material energy. And then you have a mind energy that is established between the two, between the material and the spirit energy. Okay, that's an example of mind energy, that conduit of mind that you're going to communicate, you know, send messages through in that communication circuit. Okay, that would be a spirit energy manifestation. See, so what happens is as soon as you put that spirit energy in parallel with it, mind energy reaches down, manifests from the spirit energy, and links down to the material energy. So if you want to shut down that circuit, well, remember they told you what they do. They don't take away both lanes of energy, because they still need the physical lanes for various other things. So the physical lanes, it's just the spirit controllers pull back the spirit energy, you know, and the mind manifestation goes with it. And so there's no mind energy conduit anymore to send messages through. Okay. And then you're quarantined, yeah. You're on the losing end of that line of energy. Yes. Okay, so that's a simple example that we know about of a spirit energy manifestation. See that mind that's in that conduit, you know, it's not encircuited in the Holy Spirit or something like that. It's just mind energy. It's non-spiritual mind. Okay. So there's examples of both ends. That's what they mean by that. You know, and see, it's in that sense of spiritual mind, quote unquote, when you talk about, you know, mostly just, you know, the adjutant mind being in the lower domain of the hourglass, when you use the hourglass analogy, and then the upper domain of the hourglass, and you call that spiritualized mind. See, it's spiritual mind. And it got that way because then non-spiritual mind in the lower domain of the hourglass was uplifted by grace and spiritualized, so now it's spiritual mind. Okay? And that spiritual mind in the upper domain of the hourglass, personality, spirit pattern, it can engage that. When you talk about even human mind, personal mind, right, that personality engages that. But then they throw in the qualification. Not everything that's in that upper domain of the hourglass is automatically going to get copied. Okay? Even human mind, personal mind, yes, the upper domain of the hourglass stuff, has no survival qualities apart from spirit identification. Why? Because that upper domain of the hourglass, that mind is still her mind. It's not technically yours to keep yet. I mean, she has spiritualized mind. Right? You're borrowing some of her higher mind to use in the upper domain of the hourglass. But there, if you actually, with your personality, take a hold of that and form it into a triune form, make it something that's like the cosmos, that resonates with the triunity of the cosmos. It has individuality and associativity and unity harmonized into a whole. Those forms in that upper domain, you know, are a subset of the total of what's up there. But those forms that are cosmic quality are copied by the adjuster into basically mind energy made substance, Marantia substance. You know, it's like crystallizing that spiritualized mind. Okay? what Marantia substance is. Okay, so it's a hardened copy of that fluid that you've formed rightly to conform to the cosmos. That's copied. You know, so that has survival value, has a survival quality. But if you just have a very beautiful measure of unity, merely unity in the upper domain, a very spiritual thread, that's not copied. You know, very idealistic thread, say, or something, or you know, whatever. Something that is not triune, like they remind you in paper 102, that can't be copied. That has no survival value. Fundamentally, it's like, well, this is all very abstract, you know, Chris. I don't understand. How do I make a triune thing? I'm getting a little worried that I have none of these things and nothing's being copied.
Right. Right. Screwed.
Right. All right. Right. That's why they tell you in paper 102, okay, don't worry. All you have to do to get it to form in triune fashion, to properly you know, mold itself like that, it needs a nucleating agent. It's like a raindrop needs a little something to condense on. You know, a little particle of dust or something. You know, a raindrop needs to condense on. It can't just condense in, you know, in perfectly pure air. It needs something to condense on. Okay? God. If God is the nucleus of your thought, your mind will condense in triune form around that nucleus. That's what they tell you up in paper 102. You know, to make something that's get copied, just make God the center. Exhibit a creature willingness to share that inner life with God, not merely with goodness, because that won't nucleate anything. It has to be God. It will condense about God. And is it not good news that you have a literal spirit fragment of God in that mind, in that upper domain, for things to nucleate upon now? Okay. It just condenses upon the adjuster, and he copies it. Right? So you don't have to worry about the technique here that we're all obviously ignorant of. It will happen. The adjuster is not only serves as a passive nucleus for your condensation like that, but it is actively working to tweak your form. It's like you're close. Let me just, you know, round this corner off. Okay, now it condensed on me. I'll copy it. I mean, it's actively working. First, it tries to change your mind. Then it works to adjust it. Beveling off that corner, so now it condenses. You know, you've got all you need to make this happen, but the adjuster will only step in and help like that if you've given it will permission. It's always subservient to your will. So if your goal is to nucleate upon yourself rather than upon God, if that's your will, okay, then it doesn't help you. It just sits there passively. No condensation occurs, no copying occurs. Self-righteousness does not produce soul. Yeah, so you have to choose to make God the nucleus and not you. It has to be about God at the core. You know, about eternity at the core, not about you and now. That won't condense. That has no survival value. No matter how good, merely good it is, it can't be just good. Okay?
That statement reminds me about where it says it has no survival qualities. That line in the book where it says you can be filial.
That's what I'm referring to. That's in paper 102. That's the line, right? Yeah, I mean, since I'm so referring to it, okay, let's just read that sentence. Instead of just a. Right, right. That's what I'm referring to. Okay, man. Let me read the first part. True, many apparently religious traits can grow out of non-religious roots. Man can intellectually deny God, and yet be morally good, loyal, filial, honest, and even idealistic. Man may graft many purely humanistic branches onto his basic spiritual nature and thus apparently prove his contention in behalf of a godless religion, but such an experience is devoid of survival values. God knowingness and God ascension. I mean, it's just merely good. It's not triune. You know, at the very least, understand that as it has to be not only good, but true and beautiful.
But don't you think if more people knew that, they'd focus more on God?
Well,
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
How did they come to such a thing?
Those humanistic branches, people seem to find their own reflection pretty exciting, okay? And all the things the fancy animal can do. But not one shred of fancy animalness is copied. It has no survival value because it's not technically you, it's her.
And yet that person may survive.
Right.
Just at a different
level. Well, yeah, I mean, post Pentecost, everyone survives, you know, by grace now. I mean, that's the good news.
They just got to start out.
You can be hopelessly selfish and clueless your whole life, and you still have an embryonic soul that'll be resurrected.
Just nothing came with it.
Right.
You just have a lot of work to do.
Right? Yeah, you just got to start from scratch. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Build on there.
Yeah. Right.
So this last part here, we're going to talk about ability to worship and crave survival.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people that I talk to, you know, and I ask, well, don't you care about surviving after that? Oh, well, if I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. I don't know. Nobody knows. So why even bother worrying about it? Right. I mean, I hear that quite frequently.
Right. I mean, where does that come from? What is that telling you about the functioning of their agitated mind? Okay. If you notice some of those spiritual qualities that we just read about there in them, okay, they probably have sixth agitant, you know, doing something that's noticeable. But the seventh? No. I mean, the very fact that they don't crave survival is proof.
Crave.
Crave survival means that it hasn't gone from the second level of meaning, you know, in adjutants 4, 5, and 6. It hasn't gone up to the seventh adjutant, into the neck of the hourglass, and into a recognition of the upper domain. You know, Jesus said, I would lead you up. Okay, they have awe and reverence on the second level of meaning, but they haven't gone up to the next notch, recognition. They go, oh, I can survive. I see it. Okay, I crave that. Okay, and I'm going to realize that. Recognition, you go up to the fourth level, is realization, appreciation, and love. I mean, they're just testifying that they have no consciousness that they're more than a fancy animal. They're more than a fancy animal by grace, and it'll get them to the next life. But they haven't become consciously aware of that yet.
Boy, they can be surprised.
Yeah. Wait till they, it's like, you mean I had that stuff I could have used there? Yeah, you did. That and more. You had a spirit of truth and a thought adjuster, and you used them not. You availed of them not. Right. It's sad to record. You know, that's why I repeat that sentence all the time. It's just so sad. When you can literally have someone testify to you like that, that they're functioning below the third level of meaning in terms of any active consciousness. It's like, are you curious? No. Oh, well, that's sad to record, because, you know, humans are curious.
Yeah.
Animals are not. I mean, so, all right.
Do you guys know people like that?
I think we all do. I mean, we all, you know, and some of them, you know, we all tend to have close friends like that, and it's, and you hear them say things like that, it's like, wow, that's deflating, you know.
Wanting to continue the material down here, the body. I mean, people are really freaked out. You know, there's where you can get frozen and stuff these days. You know.
Oh, yeah.
like it's such a big deal.
Won't they be surprised when they...
Because they don't have any conception that there's any kind of continuing.
Death is the worst thing that could happen.
Right. It just blows my mind. That just blows my mind.
Yeah. Won't they be surprised when they wake up in the mansion world and they didn't have enough money to cryo-freeze their whole body, so they cryo-freeze their head. And their head is not there with them.
Yeah,
when they wake up on the first mansion world. The whole universe could care less about all those dumb ideas you had there. Okay, let's get into this last section here.
Okay, section six, living forces. Life is both mechanistic and vitalistic, material and spiritual. Ever will your astrophysicists and chemists progress in their understanding of the protoplasmic forms of vegetable and animal life, but never will they be able to produce living organisms. Life is something different from all energy manifestations. Even the material life of physical creatures is not inherent in matter.
Okay. So just a basic thing there. You're going, well, wait a minute, aren't we producing living organisms? No, not in the sense they're saying here. We're just modifying the life that's already here. Okay. They're talking about no one is going to be able to assemble from scratch something that isn't automatically attuned to the life animation and the mind that's on this planet. Okay. Because, you know, it doesn't get, if it's not properly conformal to this system, it's not going to get life animation added to it, and it's not going to get mind added to it. Okay. Okay, so that's what they're talking about. None of us can, you know, design life that's for another world and it will suddenly, you know, be going here. No.
It's like Data. He wasn't really alive.
Right. Right.
That was his whole thing, right? So to speak.
Now, that first thing, life is both mechanistic, I mean, we understand that part, and vitalistic, material and spiritual. What do they mean there by vitalistic?
You brought this up the other day.
Okay. And why did they bring in the parallel there of material and spiritual? Mm-hmm. Okay, you have matter and you have spirit, these two substances. And most fundamentally, the way you can understand how they're different is one of them is self-animating and the other isn't. Matter is not self-animating substance. Life animation has to be added to it. Okay, you take dead matter, you add life animation to it, and then it's living matter. Spirit substance is self-animating. You don't have to add life animation to spirit substance. Okay. So what is that very mysterious fact that we're now going to talk about specifically in this section, this final section? Life animation. One way you can understand what it is, it's that essence, that vital essence that's in spirit substance innately, because it's self-animating. If you imagine abstractly taking that essence out of spirit substance and bestowing it on dead matter, that's effectively what you're doing here. Life animation is something that can that's part of the universe. It's innately already in spirit substance, but it's not innately already in material substance. It has to be focused down and engaged to it. So it's more innately unity-like. It's innately in the unity substance, spirit substance, but the individuality substance, matter, no. So it has to take on some kind of quasi-differentiation, quasi-individuation to come into relationship with matter. We're going to read about that in just a little bit here.
So I'm going to talk about the spirit for a second.
Okay.
So spirit substance, like when you're on, you know, one of the Havona worlds, is, for lack of a better word, alive.
I mean,
rocks aren't rocks.
When you get to a mansion, you know, in one of the architectural worlds, and there's a building made out of spirit substance, it's a self-animating building. Okay? All right. What does that mean? Yeah. All right. Pretty cool to think about.
Plans and it says, okay.
Well, it's not minded. Right? It's self-animating, but it's not minded.
Interesting.
Okay.
Kind of like Hogwarts.
Yep.
Okay, so when I'm looking at this, I'm comparing mechanistic to material, vitalistic to spiritual.
Right.
So in our world, we're talking about vitals as being a pulse, a heartbeat, a breath. And those are all spirit animations.
That were animated, but they're not spirit animations. So that's what I'm trying to get you to, don't treat this simplistically, okay? Like I'm saying, there's an essence in spirit substance that we're going to call life animation, okay? You're getting the life animation without the spirit substance. I mean, an amoeba doesn't have a spirit ministry engaged to it, but an amoeba is alive, okay? It has life animation engaged to it. It has that essence of what's innately in spirit substance, but without the substance. No spirit substance, just that vitality. And most rudimentary, we're going to call it the living vitality. You know, the most foundationally vitalistic aspect of life animation. Okay?
So then our breath and our pulse should not be considered vital?
Sure. I mean, that's the way we're alive, aren't we? And we have basic things that we measure that monitor that fact that we're alive. Now technically, you're breathing and your heart is beating and these sorts of things because mechanical mind is engaged to you. I mean, the mechanical mind is making, you know, is regulating your heartbeat and all these sorts of, and your body temperature and all these sorts of things and your breathing, okay? But, you know, why is it that dead matter has this variability? It's because it's animated. Dead matter has very limited variability. Living matter has all kinds of variability for two reasons. One, living matter is designed, the actual literal molecular stuff is designed to be variable. But number two, it has life animation added to it that makes it alive, that makes it variable instead of fixed. A rock doesn't have much variability, you know. You know, you go look at it, yep, it's granite. You come back 50 years later, yep, it's still granite. It hasn't varied into basalt, okay? But if I watch my body, it's varying all over the place.
Okay.
It's so because it's animated.
You're saying our vitals are more of the mechanical material.
Right, sure. We're,
they're not, okay.
Right, we're measuring our vitals, but we're not measuring living vitality. We're just measuring our vitals. Okay, but we're not going to talk about, see, we're trying to get at, why do we have vitals? Okay, why are we alive? It's because we have life animation associated with our matter. All right.
Things material may enjoy an independent existence, but life springs only from life. Mind can be derived only from pre-existent mind. Spirit takes origin only from spirit ancestors. The creature may produce the forms of life, but only a creator personality or a creative force can supply the activating living spark.
Okay, so just two things there. So, this may enjoy material may enjoy an independent existence. Okay, we're reminded again, we have these absolutes. We have an absolute of matter, the Isle of Paradise. We have the absolute mind, conjoint actor. We have the absolute spirit, the eternal sun. So there's this independence. And again, you know, if you want to bestow mind energy on something, you can't go over to the spirit energy reservoir and pull actualize mind energy out of that. No, you have to go to the mind energy reservoir, actualize out of that reservoir. If you need spirit substance, you need to go to the spirit, the reservoir of the potential for all spirit substance and actualize out of that reservoir. Okay, so they're just reminding you of that. Same way with life. This life animation has a reservoir. Okay, that this is coming from. It's not coming from anything related to the aisle, you know, or the unqualified absolute. It's not coming from anything related to the absolute mind or the universal absolute. It's not coming from anything related to the absolute spirit or the deity absolute. It's not related to matter, mind, or spirit. It's not coming from the reservoir of personality either. It's coming from another reservoir. There's this other fact called life animation has a totally separate reservoir. Okay, that reservoir is the infinite. It's right up there with that high reservoir, the infinite one, the reservoir will, where your personality was individuated from. The infinite's not the father. It's not the mother. It's not the sevenfold. It's a totally separate fact. Okay, that reservoir, this life can only come from there. All right, so that's what they're getting at. I just threw in a little bit more about the reservoir so you can understand. Now, I mentioned that they tend to focus mostly on the reproductive spark. But we'll see, this is the section where they very distinctly talk about both phases. Life animation has two phases. You call the most fundamental phase, foundational phase, the living vitality. Like I said, that's, you know, most immediately that vitalistic aspect. It just gives something that quality we call alive, okay, the living vitality. But if it has the ability to reproduce, not just produce copies of itself, but reproduce, okay, then it has an additional phase of life animation that we're going to call the reproductive spark. And they're referring it to there as the activating living spark. They give you, they say these things in various ways, and I've distilled sort of the pithiest little expressions for each of these. Living vitality and reproductive spark, to call those two phases.
Are you on the next section we haven't read yet?
I just wanted to stress that. Okay, yeah, now as we go forward, we kind of looking for I'm talking about two phases instead of just one, okay, because that's what we're going to be looking for here.
So creator personality versus force.
Yeah, that's right. I looked down and it's like, oh, I forgot to explain that. So a creator personality, that's obvious.
Michael?
Or creative mother spirit or an ancient of days or whatever. Yeah, okay. Some creator being. The creative force, remember, we pointed out how a life carrier is used as a conduit. Okay, so, I mean, you know, like the reproductive spark got bestowed here not directly by her, but through, you know, the life carriers. Okay, they're a means to that. Now there's probably all kinds of other things that we don't know about too, you know, that are intermediary means and stuff besides life carriers. But that's what they're getting at with that term creative force. Some sort of energy phenomenon that's not a creator, but it is tending towards that creative, yeah, IVE suffix there. Okay. That life carrier can be directed to manifest as if it was a creator. It can be creative, just like I can be creative. I'm given a personality. You know, and so creativity can flow through me. I can be creative, can be tending towards that. But I got to, you know, always remember that the source is actually, you know, above me and behind me or whatever, you know. It's just going through me. I'm not a creator personality. It's not originating out of me. Okay.
Life carriers can organize the material forms or physical patterns of living beings, but the spirit provides the initial spark of life and bestows the endowment of mind. Even the living forms of experiential life, which the experimental life, which the life carriers organize on their Salvington worlds, are always devoid of reproductive powers. When the life formulas and the vital patterns are correctly assembled and properly organized, the presence of the life carriers is sufficient to initiate life. But all such living organisms are lacking in two essential attributes, mind endowment and reproductive powers. Animal mind and human mind are gifts of the local universe mother spirit, functioning through the seven and adjutant mind spirits, while creature ability to reproduce is the specific and personal impartation of the universe spirit to the ancestral life plasm inaugurated by the life carriers.
Okay, so this is one of the most important paragraphs in the whole book.
Kind of what you've been saying
about this. I mean, you've got to know this paragraph like to properly interpret the story of life up in the historical geology papers. If you don't know this paragraph, you're going to misinterpret what's up. It's a very important paragraph. So that, so as you can see, them stating there very directly that in their normal mid-phase mode, they're working in their lab. Okay, they build an experimental organism, say, and just by their normal presence, unmodified presence, living vitality is bestowed upon that. They don't have to be modified. She doesn't have to work actively, specifically through them or anything like that. The living vitality just, you know, is always ready to flow from them. So they build it, and as soon as they put the last brick in, boom, living vitality becomes associated with that matter, that dead matter, and it becomes living matter.
In the lab.
In the lab. Okay. Right? See, so they can do what they were telling you in the first paragraph, none of us are going to do. None of us have living vitality flowing through us, okay, just innately. Now, why do they have living vitality flowing through them innately? Okay, well, in there, you notice when they first started talking about the spark again, at the beginning of that paragraph, see, but the spirit provides the spark. I've tried to point this out. Technically, to bestow that reproductive spark, it takes more than just that vertical downstepping conduit of mother deity. There has to be spirit type deity. The two together as one can conduct that reproductive spark down from the reservoir down to where it's going to be bestowed. Okay? So that's why they mention the spirit. But in order to bestow the living vitality, you have to have a conduit that's just a downstepping mother conduit with no spirit directly together with it. Okay? That's why the life carrier has three parents. Okay? Because the creative mother spirit is one of the parents. I mean, she can't change the fact that she has spirit type deity and mother type deity glued together. That's just what she is. But she obviously has a spirit or a mother type deity side to her, if you will. You take an Ancient of Days, it's a Trinity origin being. Mother type deity comes from the Trinity. So you add that Trinity origin nature, and it's like drawing the mother part of the creative mother spirit off into a separate conduit. That third creator creates another conduit that's just Trinity-like. So there's this just mother deity conduit that flows through them. So that living vitality can come down from the reservoir and through. Okay? But there's another part of the life carrier when you modify them, you know, where it's a conduit for the spirit and the mother together, and it can conduct the reproductive spark down and bestow it. That's the most obvious reason why there's that third parent, because they have to be able to function in these two independent modes. One where they just conduct the living vitality, okay, and then one where they can conduct the reproductive spark.
Mm-hmm. So the lab stuff is just the living vitality. It doesn't really...
Right, so think about what they can, you know, so they build...
It's not quite all the way there yet, right?
Well, they build let's say they build a single-celled organism in the lab, okay? That organism, it could be a full eukaryotic organism. It could split into two cells via mitosis, okay? But it's not going to be able to do meiosis and reproduce because there's no reproductive spark. Remember I mentioned that, they point out that was going on initially. The life carriers built the initial eukaryotic plant cells, and it was alive then, had living vitality, and it would have been producing copies, multiplying and stuff. There would be no reproduction. So there would have been a sort of a pre-meiosis, mitosis going on. And they tell you that, remember, for 500,000 years, remember, they were filling around with that, and they got everything the way it needed to be in that pre-meiosis mode. Then they were modified and the reproductive spark was bestowed, and Okay, and so then now you had meiosis, also a possibility, reproduction, and undoubtedly you also have a modified mitosis going on as well. Okay, but so that's, so they can do all the rudimentary testing. When something has living vitality, it'll have mechanical mind as well, because they're doing, their lab is in the presence of the mechanical controllers. You know, so mechanical mind will engage that. Okay, so you notice how they say animal mind and human mind are gifts of the local universe mother spirit. They didn't mention mechanical mind, did they? Right, see, because in the lab, they've got living vitality, mechanical mind.
So,
but they don't have adjutant mind or reproductive spark.
So when we talk about, you know, physical patterns of living beings, do you think they actually grow human beings? I mean, up to the state of, you know, actually evolving with hands and arms and stuff.
They're like sent on a mission to make bodies for a planetary prince's staff, a corporeal staff. Think of the very first time they did that. Did they do it cold the first time? No, they would have gone through all kinds of testing and this and that. All right, they can build a whole body, okay? And it'll be, you know, it'll have all of the mechanical mind and it'll have living vitality. So it'll be animate and functioning, but there's no reproductive ability and it's not, it has no adjutant mind. So it's not conscious, but it would be a living body. Unminded by this adjutant mind. Frankenstein's lab is real.
That's one of the ways that healing and sundown happened a little bit. Some of the parts and some of the things.
Okay, right. So obviously, I mean, see, anyone who has the technology to build bodies from scratch, you know, right. I mean, all those things, you know, and Jesus says do such and so, you know, the master physical controllers and the life carriers and everything, right, they can do anything like that. Right. Yeah. Yeah, just amazing technology that they have. You know, so they're literally building every single molecule of a whole body. They can do that sort of stuff. And they can animate it by themselves without, you know, they don't need to get the mother spirit stepping in. See, so that's why they, you know, you see very how precisely they state that to explain that. The mother spirit has to be involved if you're going to get adjutant mind, the animal mind or human mind. But plant? No. They can do full plants where you don't need adjutant mind. Yeah, because that's just all that needs is mechanical mind. Yep.
So I have a question about cloning.
Right.
When we clone something,
right,
does it get the spark in the reproductive?
So that's related back to that first paragraph. We can do all kinds of genetic modification, cloning, whatnot. See, all we're just working with the life that's here. Okay, now, you know, once we get more adept at engineering, you know, we'll be able to know where the boundaries are. You modify something far enough, and it won't be minded anymore. But it may still be living. You know, we already see that we can modify things, and then they're not reproducing anymore. You know, we modify things a bit, and the reproductive spark is no longer engaged with them, and they're sterile. See, so we already are you know, beginning to, you know, figure this out. I mean, so you take what's here, and like I said, it's very precisely attuned, but now this is a decimal world, so there's probably a lot more variability. We can probably play around with it in a lot bigger space without it coming unplugged in various ways, okay, because it's a decimal world. But there's going to be boundaries. You modify things far enough, and it's not going to be reproducing anymore. You modify it far enough, and you know, adjutant mind is not going to be properly connecting to it anymore. You know, starting with the highest adjutants and going down, and
it'll be living, but it'll just kind of be mind dead.
Right. It's just like you when you're dying. You know, if I'm laying on the hospital and I'm dying, and I'm slowly my body is unraveling. You know, the adjutants are disconnecting one by one. And it finally gets down. Even if I'm basically just a potted plant now, and you know, even the first adjutant can't connect to me anymore. But I still have life animation and mechanical mind. I'm still breathing and stuff. You know, but when my body temperature starts to fluctuate and my breathing starts to get irregular, my heart, you know, so, okay, the mechanical mind is starting to disconnect.
They do this with, they develop a
variety of plant or a tree, for instance, and has really nice qualities that all the things they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So then they just propagate it after that. But what happens over time, even though it's really just a clone, each one is just a...
Right.
Over time, the environment starts to attack it.
Uh-huh.
So after 30 or 40 years, these trees that had wonderful qualities, you just can't keep them alive in the environment anymore.
Yeah.
Because their adaptability has been lost.
Right. See, so all of that, just that basic rudimentary mechanical mind adaptability. You know, so and you don't have to be doing genetic engineering. You can just be doing what we've been doing since, you know, mankind first domesticated a wolf, you know? I mean, you know, look at all the different dogs we have, you know? I mean, that's playing with their variability, getting them way off in different parts. And, you know, and we all know you can get them too far out and, you know, there's real issues. The adjutants are not connecting to them properly anymore. And, you know, so you know, you have all these dogs that have variability in how well the adjutants are really connecting. It can be, you know, really stupid or really hyper or, you know, whatever. You know, it's because you're getting off on the fringes of adjutant mind being able to seat on them properly. You know, and you know, obviously can get it off to where they're sterile, and we just genetic engineering is just being able to do that more directly instead of having to go through that indirect process of breeding and whatnot, you know. But, you know, looking for natural variations and fostering that and stuff, you know, you can put the variations in, and, you know, yourself instead of waiting for them to come around, you know, on their own. Okay. All right. So that's, yes, like I said, that's a very important paragraph. See, for that, you know, really getting... He's pointing distinctly to the two parts. We'll see they mention them distinctly again here. The two phases of life animation. But it's so important to know that the life carriers can bestow the living vitality without having to be modified. So that when they come here on that scouting party 900 million years ago, you know that they're not being modified at that point. They're in their mid-phase mode. But those physical prokaryotes that are going to terraform the planet that the primary associators have built, they're all waiting, and as soon as the life carriers get there, just by their presence, living vitality is bestowed on, and those prokaryotes come alive. And you've got cyanobacteria and whatnot, and they start terraforming the planet. Okay.
Spontaneous.
Right, it just happens automatically. Okay. But, you know, you don't have that life implantation where you're going to get reproductive spark. That's not until 550 million years ago. You know, but long, see, for all that time before that, you had prokaryotic life. There was life animation. There was mechanical mind. You know, remember how early the mechanical controllers got here and set up the little cocoon that's called Monmasha. You know, you go back in the story, long before, you know, you have... things to the point where those master physical controllers are arriving, and they tell you that it was put on the records as being called Monmasha, right? That's that little cocoon of mechanical mind energy presence, you know, that's being established there. So the mechanical mind is there, and eventually they build these little, you know, machines in their image. These power beings build these little machines, and along come the life carriers, bestow living vitality on them. Boom, they're minded, and off they go. They start chewing on rocks and whatnot, terraforming the planet. And so that, see, it's very important that just happens, you know, naturally in the presence of the life carriers.
When the life carriers have designed the patterns of life, after they have organized the energy systems, there must occur an additional phenomenon. The quote-unquote breath of life must be imparted to these lifeless forms. The sons of God can construct the forms of life, but it is the Spirit of God who really contributes to the vital spark. And when the life thus imparted is spent, then again the remaining material body becomes dead matter. When the bestowed life is exhausted, the body returns to the bosom of the material universe from which it was borrowed by the life carriers to serve as a transient vehicle for that life endowment which they convey to such a visible association of energy matter.
And just like we were saying earlier, the mind is borrowed too. I mean, most of what we are is on loan. It's not ours to keep. And so you notice, that, so they say, you know that old expression that you have from, you know, the earliest days of Anagar and stuff, okay, the breath of life. Saying if you're going to use that, you could use it a little more precisely, you know, to not just indicate all of life animation, but, you know, what you're really thinking is when you, there's a reproductive spark in play. You know, again, don't take it literally like Anagar and crew did, you know, that literally your breath is life animation. And so you can measure life animation by measuring, you know, breath going in and out of your lungs. Not like that, but they're just saying you have that expression, quote unquote, the breath of life. And see, just, you know, the breath of life must be imparted to these lifeless forms. It's like, well, okay, the whole thing is kind of in quotes. You know, we already have living vitality bestowed on something when the reproductive spark is bestowed. You know, so just know, I mean, they do this a lot. I mean, a lot of times they'll say something is minded or not. Well, technically it has mechanical mind. But they're, by mind, they mean adjutant mind. You got to look in context and figure out what they mean. Life implantation doesn't mean there was no life before 550 million years ago. It's just there was not reproducing life before that. Life that's part of the evolutionary cycle, as they say, before that. But there's that non-evolving life, prokaryotic life, that's terraforming the planet. That was there before that. Okay, so just, you know, all these things, you have to always be thinking in the context. And, okay, so when... Then the life thus imparted is spent. You know, then again, the remaining material body becomes dead matter. So you have this this whole idea, and they're about to explain it a little bit more, that just like the matter and the mind energy, this life animation is just being borrowed. And when we're done with it, it goes back into the background. Okay, so that reservoir is sort of just here, you know, ubiquitously. And there's a big mystery of how that gets sort of focused out of that continuum down to associate with individual organisms. How is there kind of a differentiation from the continuum that occurs? Okay, so they're going to refer to that here next. Let me see. I think that's everything. Oh, just, you know, notice they're stressing again, but it is the spirit of God. You need more than just mother deity. You have to have spirit type deity to get that reproductive spark again. They just keep stressing that. All right.
The life bestowed upon plants and animals by the life carriers does not return to the life carriers upon the death of plant or animal. The departing life of such a living thing possesses neither identity nor personality. It does not individually survive death. During its existence in the time of its sojourn in the body of matter, it has undergone a change. It has undergone energy evolution and survives only as a part of the cosmic force of the universe. It does not survive as individual life. The survival of mortal creatures is wholly predicated on the evolvement of an immortal soul within the mortal mind.
Okay, I mean, I think the stuff, you know, that sort of is
right, no resurrection
countering the, you know, the old ghost, you know, stories and stuff of ancient men, and, you know, that's pretty obvious, I think, to everyone there. Okay, but let's get to physics here of the life animation. You know, they're about to tell you in the next sentence, you know, well, when we use energy and force like we just did, okay, now don't take that literally. Okay, so why did they use it? All right. When they say that this life animation that's associated with this dead matter, making it living matter, and they say that it's undergone energy evolution, okay, and survives only as part of the cosmic forces of the universe. Okay, when you're talking about physical stuff, what's the difference between a force and an energy? So a force, like the primordial force, the force charge of space, that's a continuum, fills all space. There's no differential in it. It's exactly the same every point in space. Okay? That's the force charge. An energy in differential from a force is a phenomenon, an energy phenomenon, where there is some difference here and there. So, like, for instance, if you make a whirl in the force charge, you know, the beginnings of a galaxy, okay, that whirl is an energy. It's not just a force. I mean, the force is being whirled, okay, but now there's more than just force there, because there's a whirl here and there's not a whirl over there. There's a differential. That differential is the energy. Okay? See, so they're pointing out you have this continuum, you know, that sort of is just the presence of the infinite, the reservoir of life animation. Okay, it's like a force. There's no differential in it. It's the same everywhere. It fills all space, or it's in association with all space, or whatever you want to say. Okay, and there's something that sort of differentiates this, so that some of that potential is actualized in going from, you see, the potential is continuous, the actuality is differentiated. So there's some of that associated with this organism, which is here and not there. So there's a differential. Even though the presence is still through all that, on top of that background potential is this energy, like this differential. And see, they're saying that we're designed to be mortal. Okay? So that slowly but surely that differential fades away and goes back to the continuum. It goes from energy-like to force-like. Okay? So it's not degrading it. It's non-degradable. I mean, if you're talking about something that's coming from the infinite, it's probably resistant to finite issues, right? So its quality stays the same. It's just that it's not differentiated like this anymore. It just melts back into the background. That's what they're talking about. Okay? And it's something, as they're about to say, that is, you don't want to think in any terms that you think about things normally. I'll explain that a little more. Just read the next paragraph.
We speak of life as quote-unquote energy and as quote-unquote force, but it is really neither. Force energy is variously gravity responsive. Life is not. Pattern is also non-responsive to gravity, being a configuration of energies that have already fulfilled all gravity-responsive obligations. Life, as such, constitutes the animation of some pattern-configured or otherwise segregated system of energy, material, mindal, or spiritual.
Yeah, they know that they pointed out the segregated. See, just like I was saying, see, the fact that you have something that's segregated, this life, which is, you know, in its reservoir state, is not segregated in any way. There's no differentiation. But it takes on, for our sake, you know, a differentiation of some sort, and becomes associated with this individuality. You have something that's a very high essence of unity. Okay, and they're giving you a clue how to think about why what I've been just saying makes sense. I'm saying that it's the reservoir is the infinite. How do you know that? Well, you figure that out deductively by sorting out total deity and everything. But notice how they say it's you don't want to think of it as matter. You don't want to think of it as mind energy. You don't want to think of it as spirit substance. Okay, they say there's something that's also very kind of hard to pin down. That's like this pattern. Doesn't matter if it's energy pattern or spirit pattern. Energy pattern is what we normally just call pattern. Spirit pattern is what we normally call personality.
Yeah.
Right. So let's focus on the personality part. They're saying it's this life animation is like personality. You know, personality is not matter, mind, spirit, Barancha. Okay. It's an influence. You don't want to think of it as a ball of or glob of anything. You know, it's just some sort of very high transcendent influence that gets imposed upon things. It's the same level of transcendence is this life animation. It's an influence, like pattern, like personality, that gets imposed upon a thing, upon a substance. Okay. You know, right up there at eye level with the infinite is the infinite one. The infinite one's the reservoir for pattern. The infinite's a reservoir for life animation. Those reservoirs are super absolute. They're above the absolutes of matter, mind, and spirit. Okay? And so they don't manifest, they manifest in a less thing, stuff-like way. They're transcendent of even the for us, the ethereal stuffness of spirit substance. Okay? So that's why they brought that in. So think of it, they're two of these very, very mysterious, subtle influences that transcend the absolute level. So even revelators have a very limited understanding of such things. Right? All of our revelators are you know, are finite beings. Okay, so all right, so that's what they're getting at there.
There are some things connected with the elaboration of life on the evolutionary planets which are not altogether clear to us. We fully comprehend the physical organization of the electrochemical formulas of the life carriers, but we do not wholly understand the nature and source of the hydrolyzed life-activating spark.
Activation spark.
Activation spark. We know that life flows from the Father through the Son and by the Spirit. It is more than possible that the Master Spirits are the sevenfold channel of the river of life, which is poured out upon all creation. But we do not comprehend the technique whereby the supervising Master Spirit participates in the initial episode of life bestowal on a new planet. The Ancients of Days, we are confident, also have some part in this inauguration of life on a new world, but we are wholly ignorant to the nature thereof. We do know that the universe Mother Spirit actually vitalizes the lifeless patterns and imparts to such activated plasm the prerogatives of organismal reproduction. We observe that these three are the levels of God the sevenfold, sometimes designated as the supreme creators of time and space. But otherwise, we know little more than your answer mortals. Simply that concept is inherent in the Father, expression in the Son, and life realization in the Spirit. Indicted by a Veronidex son stationed on Urantia as an observer and acting in this capacity by request of Melchizedek Chief of the Supervising Revelatory Corps.
Okay, so let's go through all that here. Now,
pretty heavy.
That's a long paragraph, and we don't have to unpack it all. I'll explain in a second. Okay, so let me just point out a couple things. Did you notice That sentence, you know, that's two-thirds of the way in? We do know that the universe Mother Spirit actually vitalizes the lifeless patterns and imparts to such activated plasm the prerogatives of organismal reproduction. See, so there it is, very definitively again, the two phases. And you can see why I'm calling the first one the living vitality, because that captures the spirit of the way they talk about it. He vitalizes the lifeless pattern. So that's the living vitality, okay, and then upon that, you have the reproductive spark. Prerogatives of organismal reproduction, in italics, you have life activation spark, let's call it the reproductive spark, okay? So you have those two definite, and you notice again, see it says the universe mother spirit actually does this, well, okay, but she's using the life carrier as a technical element of this, and she's using him in two different ways. To get the reproductive spark, you know, she uses him as a conduit for spirit and mother deity together to conduct that spark. But she also uses him just as a conduit for mother deity to conduct the living vitality. Uses him in that two modes, in those two modes. Okay, and you know, I've been telling you, but notice they're not done emphasizing that they did it again. It says the life flows from the Father through the Son and by the Spirit, right? That reproductive spark, you got to have the Spirit. I mean, they just keep drilling this so that once you start unpacking this, you're right on track. Okay, and I'm not going to unpack most of this because to unpack this paragraph, you need to unpack the central universe. This is another one of those paragraphs. But I can tell you, as you work through, you know, methodically work through all the details of the central universe, all of this just naturally comes out. You understand all of these things that they say. Yeah, you can deduce it just like they do. And then you have the statement, they say, now you know as much as we do. Okay? You know, but it all comes out. You can understand very directly the whole bit about from the Father through the Son and by the Spirit. You can understand that literally. You can understand the bit with the master spirits and the seven. How do they say that? Something like a sevenfold channel or something. Where in the heck do they say that? Oh yeah, right there. The master spirits are the sevenfold channel of the river of life. You can understand that very specifically. All that is. You can unpack and get the specifics on this. And to do that, is very complicated. So we're not going to do it. But they throw in one little thing they want you to reflect on. So they said, you've got all of these individuals, and they seem to be working, in this coordinated fashion, and it's mysterious. Right? Did you get, how they were saying that? Okay, and then they threw you a clue. We observe, in other words, you ought to observe also. We observe that these three are the levels of God the sevenfold. Okay. The secret for all of these things to work together as if they were one, okay, as it, from the individuality viewpoint, you have all these different individuals. And in the case of, when you talk about the sevenfold, okay, if you talk about it from the individuality viewpoint, you're including all the Frandalanks and all that, and you have a countless number of individuals. Okay? But if you turn it around and look at it from the unity viewpoint, you have no individuals. You have one facet of deity, the sevenfold. Not God the sevenfold, just the facet of deity, the sevenfold. See, they threw that in as a little reminder. No matter how mysterious the coordination of Frandalanks and master spirits working together along with, this menagerie of beings seemingly doing all kinds of independent things, and look at that, when all is said and done, it all is coordinated. How does that work? None of them sent messages to each other. Well, remember, from the unity viewpoint, it's just one facet of deity. So it's not surprising that it's coordinated. It's unity. Okay? That's why they throw that in, just for you to marvel at that. This demonstration, that behind it is a single facet of deity, and it just can't help but be coordinated and work together as a seamless whole. Okay, and it's a seamless whole that is in parallel to the mother, that continuous span of deity that I've been talking about, the verticalness of mother deity. There is a discrete vertical thing, the staircase of the sevenfold. So you have this continuous mother deity, and then you have this kind of staircase, sort of the way the sevenfold manifests. It's one, but when you observe it in action, it doesn't work so smoothly. It has a more of a level-like manifestation to it, where you have seven levels to it. I mean, it's one, but it's obviously kind of quasi-individuated, even in its wholeness. Okay, those are the clues that they want you to have. And like I said, you follow those and you can unpack and get the details. One last thing, the byline. Okay, indicted by a Veronidex son, stationed on Urantia as an observer, and acting in this capacity by request of the Melchizedek chief of the supervising revelatory corps. Okay, we're talking about part two, the supervising revelatory corps. You know, I got that second commission of the 12 beings in the local universe that are in charge of this. Who's the Melchizedek that's in charge of this revelatory commission? Remember his name? You know, like Mantusha. Right. So the Melchizedek chief, that's Mantusha. Okay. He's on, you know, he's part of the 12. Oh, the Veronidex son here is not, right? Mantusha, you know, is telling our most high observer, the Veronidex son that's stationed on our planet as the most high observer, he's you know, conscripted him to do this paper. Okay? The Veronidex son is not part of the commission. Why is the Veronidex son, who's the most high observer, why is he the best person in the universe of universes to write the paper on the life carriers? Why in the heck didn't Mantusha get a life carrier? One of the life carriers is stationed here to do it. Well, I was like, well, that's kind of self-referential, isn't it? You know, yeah. And Mantusha probably thought that too. It's like, well, okay, so if I don't have one of the life carriers, you know, who could I have to write about the life carriers in general? Their boss. The life carriers that are stationed on this planet, okay, we're working under the planetary prince. Since Andanin, you know, I mean, you know, they took those, you know, renunciation vows back with Andanin and Fonta, and were working under the Melchizedek observers. But then when the planetary prince got here, they were working, you know, under the planetary prince, under his administration. The prince rebels 200,000 years ago. Who steps in? The Most Highs. Okay? Who immediately takes over as boss of the life carriers who've got to be, you know, you can't have the life carriers being directed, okay, off into squirrely directions, right? Immediately, the Most High Observer becomes their boss.
Planet Forge?
No. You know, we don't know the name of our Veronidex son, but okay. But this, you know, the Veronidex son that's stationed here, so I actually wrote this. It's because he is in charge of the life carriers that are on this planet right now, and that hasn't changed. You know, until the rebellion is settled, I mean. The Veronidex son is staying in charge of this. Remember, they mentioned when they talk about the planetary government, there's another group that we're about to read about in the next section, in the next paper, that are also have the Veronidex son for their boss, who also directs them, the race commissioners. The race commissioners, the life carriers, and if you don't remember what race commissioners are, we'll get to that in the next paper. These beings, you know, that are very much about directing what's going on with the life. Nothing can be shoddy, fuzzy about that. It's gotta be rock solid. He's their boss. That's why he wrote this paper. Yep.
I just have a quick question, because sometimes they'll say presented by or sponsored by. This one is indicted by.
Right.
So what's the difference?
Not to go off on that tangent too much, but I mean, at times they are just reminding you of how directly they're related. This Veronidex son, okay, can directly talk to a secondary midwayer, you know, who's actually writing this paper on a piece of paper, right? He's dictating it to the secondary midwayer. It's indicted. It's literally just, you know, In the literal sense of indicted, that simple sense of just dictating, you know, he's literally speaking, and the secondary midwayer is writing it down. You don't need any contact personality or anything for this paper.
Think he's speaking English, or think he's
trying? Well, I mean, he's got it. You know, I mean, it's in English. You know, but anyway, like I said, we don't need to try to unpack all those details right now, because it'll take us too long. We're already over time here. But just, you know, at times you can see it immediately that they're saying that, because that's exactly what's going on. No, you know, no contact personality is needed here or anything. And also, you know, sometimes they say it where they're obviously sort of just overseeing the paper, but they've got unnamed others that are involved in putting the paper together, and they're kind of just coordinating it. The different names are, you know, sometimes giving you shades of that, those sorts of differences, exactly, you know, specifics of what went on. All right. Let's just hold it right there, and next time we'll get into some more of the beings. It'll be a little less dense going forward here in the next paper. Let's take a moment here.